You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
We told you a couple of weeks ago, based on language and publicly available indictments, that the FBI clearly had foreknowledge of the riot at the Capitol that day. And the agents we spoke to this weekend confirmed that is true. Quote, the FBI had sources in that crowd, confidential sources, snitches. That's 100% certain. But it's not just political protesters the government is spying on. Yesterday, we heard from a whistleblower within the U.S. government who reached out to warn us that the NSA, the National Security Agency, is monitoring our electronic communications and is planning to leak them in an attempt to take this show off the air.
Pretty strong words from Tucker Carlson. This is June 30th, 2021. I want to point out, and I will repeat it from time to time, I'm a very big fan of Tucker Carlson, but the statement he just released that you heard then, that the NSA is spying on his program in an effort to take it off the air, I'm afraid I'm going to have more than Tucker Carlson's word. I'm going to have to see some proof. I'm going to have to see some kind of evidence. Now, he has and his team have filed a Freedom of Information Act with the government. It's a request, I should say, Freedom of Information request with the government to get documents that would prove, apparently, what a whistleblower told them. Tucker's convinced it's happening. He presented no evidence, none whatsoever. Again, I'm a big fan of Tucker Carlson. But when you make a claim like that, you're going to have to back it up. I called balls and strikes on this program. I've told you before, you may not like that. You may want me to only, hey, you're getting out of your lane. You're supposed to always be in this lane, Larry. You're getting too close to dependents. Oh, now you're getting too close to liberals. Now you're getting too close to the fake news, or as I call them, the state-controlled media. Wait a minute before you start that. First of all, and I love saying this, it's my program. I can do what I want. I can change lanes anytime I want. But my obligation to you is critical. And 50-plus years in news, I have a basic fabric that I'm going to be fair and even. As a news anchor, I could never express an opinion. This is my program. I can say what I want. And you may like it, love it, hate it, rip it. It's your option at that end. I'm not the only one questioning Tucker. I was trying to get Jim Garrick lined up. We had Jim on the other day, as you well know. And we were talking at that time about another subject, a story he had done. But he knows basically things that need to be answered here. And he did a very good column raising the same questions I had as I heard Tucker Carlson make that statement. I wanted to get him lined up as a guest today. He obviously is being besieged, and it probably won't happen, but that doesn't mean we won't revisit. We have a lot of other things also to cover over the next 2 hours. We have a lot of material. Believe me, some of it is still being gathered as I speak, and I mean that literally. In fact, I'm getting details of one coming across right now, which I'll give you in just a moment. But I'm going to have to hold on that one. In the meantime, you've got Congressman Clyburn. He's a very staunch Democrat. He was part of the effort with Martin Luther King and others to basically make sure civil rights were applied evenly across the South at that time. And Congressman Clyburn, Democrat, South Carolina, says this defund the police thing we've been hearing from the Democrats, that's going to destroy us and our movement. He's against it. We're also going to hear from Congresswoman Omar defending anti-Semitic remark, saying I have a perfect reason to say it. We're also going to be joined by Ed Hazelmeyer of the Heritage Foundation. A lot of questions about the vaccines. Are they going to be effective? Are they going to be effective against variants? Should children be getting them? Are all the vaccines safe to begin with? And, of course, the allegations that Batwoman at the Wuhan lab has direct, numerous ties to the military. And they want us to believe that it just leaked out, and they want us to believe they were not trying gain of function, weaponizing. We have a lot to cover. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
If you have mold in your home, your family can get very sick. You need to call Wellington Environmental. Realtors, even hospitals and doctors call Wellington to solve mold issues. A Belleville homeowner discovered mold. Good thing he called Wellington. The mold is gone. And Wellington's new chemical process saved him $3,500. A university was facing some major mold issues. They called Wellington. Issues solved. The university saved $40,000. Wellington also helps research and test new products to deal with mold. Call 314-644-4930. 644-4930. A-rated by the BBB, Missouri, and Illinois. Say you heard about Wellington on Larry Connors USA. Save $100 on any mold treatment or $50 on mold sampling. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental. I want you to know something special. John Beal Roofing constantly gives back to the community in so many ways, supporting more charities and good causes than any other local roofing company. Why? It's the right thing to do. Keep that in mind when you need a new roof, plus quality work at the lowest price, guaranteed. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
And we're down, we go.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
There will always be those who will attempt to take advantage of it with their own ideas in mind. That's what happened back in the 60s. I often talk with John Lewis about how the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee that both of us were founders of, how it got hijacked. And while we were sort of plugging along, doing our thing, registering people to vote, getting political activity going, all of a sudden we woke up one morning and there was a new slogan, burn, baby, burn. That was not our slogan. That slogan got superimposed over the movement. And before you knew it, the movement was destroyed.
Those are the words of South Carolina Democrat Congressman James Clyburn. And as you heard him mention that he had been a founding member of what was sometimes referred to as SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. It was in the 60s one of the main channels for young people to get involved in the civil rights movement. In fact, they led student sit-ins at segregated lunch counters in Greensboro, North Carolina, Nashville, Tennessee, always trying to coordinate and involve challenges to the civic segregation and political exclusion of African Americans. That was all happening in the 60s. They also contributed to the registration and mobilization of black voters all across the Deep South. They were doing, I would definitely say God's work at that point, making sure that all people were to be treated equal, regardless of color, race. That's what they were doing in the 60s. Across the South at the time in the 60s, you had Democrats basically running those areas, and Democrats were the segregationists. Democrats were members of the Klan. Democrats were coming up with Jim Crow laws. Jim Crow laws saying that if you're going to vote, you got to prove you can read and write. Well, that was automatic strike against many blacks at that point and many whites, but all for the whites were allowed. And another Jim Crow law, that if you don't have land, you're not entitled to vote. Well, few, if any, blacks actually had land that belonged to them. They were sharecroppers on land where they worked it and got something off of it, but it wasn't there, so they didn't have any land. Same thing with many whites. They didn't have it, but they kind of have a way to vote as well. Everything the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee was doing was trying to enable the power of the vote of black Americans. And it was valid, and it was holding to its principle that we are not going to show any violence. Martin Luther King Jr. certainly endorsed them and stepped up and helped them as well, because he had the same attitude. Now, Jim Clyburn, House Majority Whip since 2019, two-time Majority Whip, previously, of course, when we had the Democrats controlling the Senate previously. At this moment, he is a third-ranking House Democrat. That's behind Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer, who's now serving as Majority Whip. Clyburn played a pivotal role in the 2020 presidential election. He endorsed Joe Biden 3 days before the South Carolina Democrat primary. He has cut his teeth on politics, and he's also walked the walk and walk the talk at the same time. But as you heard him say, we were doing great. We founded the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee to get folks to vote, and we were doing it with sit-ins and peaceful First Amendment guaranteed rights of assembly. Nonviolent, all the time. And that was tough. That was tough in many cases. One, because police in the South, law enforcement, was not kind in many cases. In other cases, if it wasn't the police, it was white citizens. Let's be direct about it. White Americans. And if the police were there, they just stood back. They didn't do anything to help protect the black Americans at that time. And then this slogan came out, burn, baby, burn. He said it got thrown onto our campaign. We never said that. We never wanted it. And the moment that hit us and we got labeled with it and it got promoted, and see, they had the fake media even then, although it wasn't as a media as you look at it now. It was just repeated over and over again, and that's what these folks were all about, burn, baby, burn, because there had been some incidents of fires and arson. He said, that was not us. It never was, but it basically destroyed our campaign. The reason I'm bringing us to that very point is because James Clyburn, Democrat, South Carolina, is now trying to sound the alarm, ringing the bell, banging on the drum, hitting the siren that all you Democrats who were out there talking about defunding the police, where he saw burn, baby, burn, destroy what they were doing, he sees defund the police the same.
That phrase, defund the police, cost Jamie Harrison tremendously.
And talking about Harrison, one of the Democrats that lost votes in the last election around. Now, we do know that some Democrats came out after the election, after this last presidential election, and they were saying, hey, we got to walk away from these kinds of remarks. It cost us. When you start talking about defunding police and pulling police out and cutting budgets as a progressive left wanted, it cost us votes. And it's going to cost us in the future. And those remarks by James Clyburn were just made in an interview he did. So it wasn't even back then. He's saying right now in an interview with Axios that aired Monday night, he said, we keep making that mistake. We're foolish. that you got to be this progressive or that progressive, and that phrase, defund the police, cost Democrat Senate candidate Jamie Harrison tremendously. And in fact, when the host of Axios pointed out that Senator Clyburn seemed mad, he said, "I am mad." I mean, he didn't hold back. He was angry to no extent, because what they were doing is using a label again to basically hurt Democrat prospects moving forward. Defund the police. I read you yesterday. Let me refer back to it. Part of a Pew Research study. And this Pew Research study pointed out, and in fact, the New York Times was making the same notations about it, that the Pew data made something very clear, that black, Hispanic, Asian American voters are to the right of white Democrats on many issues, that many voters of color are skeptical of immigration and free trade. They favor border security and some abortion restrictions. And these black, Hispanic, Asian American voters to the right of white Democrats are worried about crime, and they oppose cuts to police funding. But the slogan is being used repeatedly and spread around. And now you have many in the Democrat Party saying, you know, James Clyburn, how old is that guy? I mean, you know, he's been around forever. You know, he's not really with it. He's not one of the new types. I mean, like the squad, and we're young and we're active and we're involved in things. Clyburn's been involved in politics since 1969. He was born in 1940. You want to do the ciphering? They just say 40, 60, 20, 81. Does that sound about right? They're thinking, you know, he's another one of those dinosaurs, because he doesn't get what is necessary. No, he gets it. And on top of that, he fires back. The reason he's mad, because how dare they claim that I'm not progressive enough?
If you could have a caucus meeting right now and you would or tell folks what they should do differently, given the losses that we have, what would you say to them?
Stop sloganeering. Sloganeering kills people. Sloganeering destroys movements. Stop sloganeering.
Stop it. Stop the sloganeering. Yeah, he says this is not going to do us any good. It's going to help it hurt us. He said, you're going to rely on all these slogans. You're not going to get enough out of it. He's repeatedly voiced concerns about these calls to reduce police funding. He said, that's why we did struggle in the 2020 elections. We were not able to discipline ourselves according to voter sentiment. We keep making that mistake. And he said again, this foolishness about you got to be this progressive or that progressive. Here's a Democrat inside the party saying, the far left, and those who are trying to kowtow to the far left and bow down, and, oh, I don't want to upset them because they might come after me. I don't want to be canceled. I'm a Democrat, but they may decide to cancel me. If you remember, the squad at one point even referred to Nancy Pelosi. Now, this is another dinosaur in their view, by the way. Nancy Pelosi is being racist. They did. You think they're going to hear? Actually, I don't care if they don't, because let them continue that. It will be destructive to them, because we are seeing crime go up continuously. And I just read you that Pew Research report, which I certainly believe exists, in the sense that many, and I've said it before, many black Americans, they do not want defunding police, because you take police, you cut their budgets, you're going to pull them out of the neighborhoods where they're needed the very most. We are going to have to back off and consider that what we need to do is find some middle ground. I mean, when you still have these sloganeers, as he's calling them, going out there and saying, oh, we're going to bring in, counselors to kind of defuse an incident. In fact, we don't even need cops to have guns in some cases. This, they talked about, don't even give the cops guns. They don't need to take a gun to everything. Leave in the car. Every one of them that has that attitude, I want them right now to go to a local police department, sign up, and go through training and become a police officer and come upon an event. Just a domestic disturbance, a husband and wife arguing with each other. It gets a little loud. One of them calls police saying, I want him out of here, and it's my house. And you leave your gun in the car. You've been trained, but you're going to leave the gun in the car, and you're going to walk in, and you're going to calm things down. Or you're going to make a traffic stop. Guy had a taillight out. There's a reason to give a citation, but you're also going to inquire, you know, want to see driver's ID and registration information just in case they're wanted. You won't know until you get to the window. But, I mean, it's just a traffic. They got their turn signal out. So you leave your gun in the car, and you walk up to the car and say, let me see your driver's license. And all of a sudden, you realize you have just stopped someone wanted for a series of murders. What do you think your chances are of walking back to your car to get your gun? Now, here's another issue that Clyburn did not address, but here he's saying that, you know, these kinds of slogans and everything, they hurt us. I wonder how that would apply to the U.S. flag, and in particular, what happened with a would-be Olympian this last time around. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. I can't wait to get on the road again.
On the road. This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Just want to ask, what is it about the national anthem or that whole scenario that made you feel so uncomfortable? Why didn't you want to, acknowledge that part?
History. If you know your history, you know the full song of the national anthem. The third paragraph speaks to slaves in America, our blood being slain and pilfered all over the floor. Mm-hmm. It's disrespectful, and it does not speak for Black Americans.
That's the response that Gwen Berry gave as she was being interviewed on the Black News Channel. She's an Olympic hammer thrower. She took third place in the trials the other day. And while on the podium and getting her third place award, they were playing the national anthem. And the other two on the stand, podium, put their hands over their hearts. She turned away from the flag and the national anthem and facing the crowd. And of course, it caused a backlash right away. What she said, we need to break down. When she said, if you know the third verse, if you know the third paragraph speaks to slaves in America, our blood being slain and pilfered all over the floor, I believe were her words. The word slave does appear in the original lyrics Key wrote to honor our U.S. flag. The line reads, no refuge could save the hireling and slave. But they weren't talking about black slavery at that point. It's referring to one of the reasons we were at war with Britain in the War of 1812. That's when he wrote the national anthem. It was not referring to blacks. It was referring to the reason we went to war and the fact that slavery at that point was considered the British Navy's practice of taking Americans, trying to press them into serving the British crown, making them slaves to the British Navy. In fact, a large number of black soldiers were fighting for the U.S. during the war that sparked Francis Scott Key to write the music, the tune, I should say. Key was certainly aware of that. He made no attempt to dismiss their heroism. But slaves did not refer to blacks at that point. It referred to the fact the British were trying to enslave Americans in general, regardless of their color. Barry explains, here's what happened when they started the event.
Well, originally, we were not even supposed to be on the podium during the singing or the playing of the national anthem. When we were back in the call room, the directions were that we were going to be introduced to the crowd before the anthem was going to be played or after the anthem was going to be played. No one made any mention or any notion that we would be on the podium or had to be on the podium during the singing of the national anthem. I want to make that clear. Mm-hmm. Those were our directions, either before or after. Mm-hmm. No other event group that I know of stood on the podium during the playing of the national anthem.
All right, well, let her again briefly explain her original thought about the history.
The intent was we would be introduced to the crowd either before or after the singing of the national anthem. Mm-hmm. In which if we had that option or if I knew that I was going to be on the podium, I would have chose something else. Mm-hmm.
She would have said, I'm not participating because I can't support it because it talks about slaves. Somebody needs to inform her the actual facts. Coming up, Ed Hazelmeyer, the Heritage Foundation, vaccines, dangerous? And what about the ties to the military? Stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
I'm sure many of you do enjoy entertaining guests. I mean, it's your nature to be hospitable, but we all draw the line at unwelcome guests. You know, those that come in tramping around, oh, they're 6 feet, 8 feet, more. And when that happens, you do not want to delay. Call Rottler Pest Solutions immediately. Now, I started using Rottler more than 30 years ago because I wanted professionals. Rottler knows what is needed and at the same time will make sure that your family and pets are safe. Rottler is still family-owned and operated for 3 generations, protecting homes and businesses. 3 generations. That's impressive. So when you want to safely, expertly get rid of ants, spiders, and other critters, call Rottler Pest Solutions, 877-ROTTLER, or you can check their website, rottler.com, 877-ROTTLER, 877-ROTTLER, Rottler Pest Solutions, rottler.com.
Well, I started out with $1 lone dollar, gambled with a man and I won me another, bought me a gun and I robbed my brother. I'm bad, but I don't care, boys, gonna be a millionaire.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
My guest is an expert in healthcare policy and markets at the Heritage Foundation, and Ed, I think I slipped up, mispronounced your name earlier. It's Ed Hazelmeyer. Glad to have you on board with us again.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I tell you what we have been hearing from a lot of folks. They don't know if they should get the vaccine or not. Others are saying, yes, you should. Then the question about their kids. There is concern about that it was warp speed and it was great to get it out and it may or may not have had a dramatic effect upon the spread of COVID. But then again, there's so many questions about we don't know long term, especially when it comes to kids. So let's begin there. The CDC, they're already looking at, I think, what, lowering it down to maybe age 12, that age 12 and up could get the vaccine. Is that the latest you've heard? And what's your thought on children at this point? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, first off, the thing to pay attention to is the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, not the CDC.
You're right.
CDC vaccine recommendations. FDA actually evaluates the science. So we've had a lot of issues with CDC saying conflicting things during the pandemic. So focus on FDA.
Yeah, and I'm glad you correct that because the CDC is one of the issues. I just had it out of place in the article. Here, go ahead, sir.
Yeah. So basically, if you have not received the vaccine right now, I would talk to your physician about this. Okay, these things are not 100% safe. Nothing is. No drug is. You know, not even aspirin is 100% safe. You know, some patients, it's the wrong thing. So you really need to talk to your physician, or if you don't have a regular physician, you know, you could even talk to the physicians at the vaccination site or something like that. in terms of what the vaccine does, it protects you against the illness having severe effects. Okay,
so you may still get it, which some people have, but yeah, you're just saying it won't be as severe.
Like this way, think about the flu vaccine. Okay, if you get the flu vaccine, you may still get the flu, but it'll be fairly mild, or you won't even notice it.
Right.
Okay, so it doesn't stop the spread. It's not like, you know, germ killer or something that stops the germs. It's protecting you, and it's helping your body fight it off. It's giving your body instructions on how to fight it off. So the first thing is, if you've had COVID and recovered from it, you already have, your body already knows how to do that. So the need for a vaccine for people, I mean, one of my sons, for example, who 22 years old, had COVID and recovered.
How old was he?
22.
Okay.
Yeah. So he doesn't necessarily need the vaccine. And that's one of the issues. Is the risk of something else more for somebody like that versus an older person like myself, where the risk of being hospitalized with severe results of COVID was much worse than any side effect of the vaccine?
So we had the vaccine they presented. We had three different makers. There have been some questions about, depending on which source you're listening to, concerns about, be it the Johnson & Johnson or the Moderna or whatever else. The efficacy is one issue. And again, like you said, the safety, because there have been reports linked to, especially among the young people getting it, more evidence of some kind of heart issues to some extent. The right. numbers are still very unclear, but what's your understanding on it?
Well, actually, it's interesting. I spoke with a leading physician who's one of the physicians, Dr. McCullough from Texas, who's been a pioneer in developing the protocols for treating COVID. And he was on a panel that we had the other day. And I raised this question about some of the safety data which he presented. And one of the issues, again, this is an issue you have with any drug, and this is one of the things FDA always is looking at. Is it the mechanism of action, or if it was a drug, the active ingredient, or is it something else in the formulation that is not supposed to be the thing that's active, but is there for another purpose? And basically, we're seeing that some of these cases, and as he was pointing out, if it's a reaction within the first 24 hours, it's highly likely that it's not the mechanism of action that's caused that. It's something else. And we saw this in the AstraZeneca vaccine in Europe, which is not approved in the U.S. yet, where it looked like some of those blood clotting issues were not attributable to the mechanism of action, but were attributable to something else in the formulation. So these are the kinds of things that they're trying to sort through. But, yes, that does raise an issue for somebody who's younger, regardless of the cause of the side effect or the cause of the problem. It raises the issue of, is the risk from the disease outweighed by the risk from the vaccine?
Well, the Johns Hopkins medicine,
the risk for the disease is outweighed the risk of the vaccine for somebody who's elderly or, but for somebody who's young, that may not be true. Somebody who's pregnant, a woman who's pregnant.
That's another issue,
that
yeah.
may not be true.
Or a cancer patient. There have been questions about that, if they're on any kind of cancer treatment.
I have friends who are cancer patients, yes. And actually, I have one who is undergoing treatment right now but had the vaccine beforehand. But that was one of the issues to coordinate and one of the issues to discuss. So, yeah, these things are This is what doctors do, and this is what the researchers at FDA do, is they look at this data as it comes in and try to tease it out, and they update the information for the physicians, and FDA has been recently doing that.
You're listening to Ed Heiselmeyer, an expert in healthcare policy and at the Heritage Foundation. And one other question on the vaccine before I turn the corner on it. Now, the Johns Hopkins Medicine is saying that they're using all three of them. They're all, they consider all highly effective in preventing serious disease, hospitalization, and death. The question has also been that once you have it, are you going to need a booster shot, or will you be immune for life? Are the variants that are showing up, Delta and so forth, that now, oh, no, you're going to have to do something else. You'll have to go back to masking as well.
Yeah, those are two things that are being investigated both here and in other countries. So far, the evidence that is accumulating from those investigations are, one, that the protection, the antibody response is long-lasting, that, in fact, the head of Pfizer was, I think, quoted just recently saying, you know, the latest information indicates that the booster probably won't be needed. The other thing is England, which has experienced the new variant, the so-called Delta variant, well before we did, so, you know, a couple months ago, they started to get that, and much broader than we have. They've been going through the data. The British health system over there has gone through the data, and it's just been published. And what they're finding there is for severe cases, in other words, for how good is it at preventing severe cases, people have to be hospitalized, the effectiveness seems to be almost identical, almost the same for the new variant as it is for the old version of the
virus. Well, we have Springfield, Missouri.
You're looking at 90+%
right.
Efficacy in preventing
extremely
a serious issue like somebody needing to be hospitalized.
Well, Springfield, Missouri area, the Ozark, it's a big recreational area for Missouri, and they're having an outbreak apparently of the Delta, but and so we're they're going to kind of watch that. But I want to turn the corner a bit, that if we'd known more in the very beginning, could we have done more? And then again, what's happening now? And NBC Nightly News had a report last night that the so-called Batwoman that works at the Wuhan lab in this last minute and a half has multiple connections with military officials. Does that surprise you? And are your thoughts on this being weaponized, or as they like to say, a cold and gain of function efforts?
Well, okay, so with respect to know more, you mean about the origin of the...
Right, if we'd had more information in the very beginning as opposed to being given the door, basically. You got about a minute
far. I think that my sense is I'm not at all surprised. I'm not an expert in this and I haven't investigated, but my sense is I'm not at all surprised that as the evidence is coming out that this was some kind of manipulated virus that got out of the lab. My intuition, and this is not based on anything other than just observing bureaucracies and societies, is this is kind of like China's version of Chernobyl. You have this sort of stuff where you're playing with dangerous technologies, whether they're biologics or nuclear power plants or things like that. That's stuff that you have to be careful with, even in a society like ours. If you put that in the context of a society like the Soviet Union in the case of Chernobyl, or the Chinese Communist government in the case of this virus, where corners are routinely cut, where there's corruption, where there's a tendency to cover things up, to worry about image and bad news. I mean, you see all this stuff.
No, all of that stuff is in play, sure, sure.
Yeah, I mean, you see that with companies trying to hide the bad news, you know. But it's in a closed society, in a more authoritarian society, those tendencies that people have to do that are just exacerbated.
Nailed it. You nailed it on that point, that's for sure. Ed, as always, we appreciate it.
I'm not all that surprised if I hear that this is some kind of a screw up there.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you.
Intentional.
Ed, thank you very much. Ed Heiselmeyer, the Heritage Foundation, we're up against a heartbreak. Ed, I do thank you for your time. Coming up, folks, breaking news on Bill Cosby and his prison sentence. Stand by.
Maybe I'm going deaf.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I've been following this story since we began this hour and waiting for additional details to come down. And here's where it stands at this point. You probably heard it mentioned at the top of the hour on the network news. Bill Cosby's sexual assault conviction has been overturned. Overturned by Pennsylvania High Court. The court ruling that it found an agreement with a previous prosecutor that prevented him from being charged in the case. That Cosby has served now more than 2 years of a 3 to 10 year sentence in a state prison near Philadelphia. He had vowed to serve all 10 years rather than acknowledge any remorse over the 2004 encounter with one of the accusers, Andrea Constant. Cosby, now 83, convicted of drugging and molesting Constant, who was a Temple University employee, at his suburban estate. And he got charged in 2015. The arrest coming just days before that 12-year statute of limitations expired on the rape charge involving her. And then the trial judge allowed only just one other accuser to testify at his trial when the jury deadlocked. But then the judge did allow five other accusers to testify at the retrial about their experiences with Cosby in the 80s. Well, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruling that the testimony tainted the trial, even though a lower appeals court found it appropriate to show a pattern of drugging and molesting women. There were numerous such stories to come out. Now, Cosby at the time was the first celebrity tried and convicted in the hashtag MeToo era. So a lot of folks are now saying, well, how's this going to affect other accusers? I mean, how's it going to work if this case being reversed on the grounds that it did? The law on prior bad act testimony does vary by state, according to a piece of information I've got from a legal source here. This ruling actually only holds sway in Pennsylvania, but they have to consider, well, could it be interpreted in such a way in other states and in other cases? By the way, the prosecutors in Philadelphia are not immediately saying if they're going to appeal or even seek to try Cosby for a third time. The justices in hearing the appeal from Cosby and his attorney had some concern, not just about sexual assault cases, but also what they saw is the judiciary's increasing tendency to allow testimony that crosses the line into character attacks. In New York, the judge presiding over last year's trial of Harvey Weinstein, remember that case that sparked also the explosion of the hashtag MeToo movement in 2017? That sparked it, but Cosby was the first to be tried and convicted under it, I should say. That judge did let four other accusers testify, and Weinstein was eventually convicted and sentenced to 23 years in prison. He's still facing separate charges in California. So in Cosby's case, the lawyer arguing to the court that prosecutors put on vague evidence about an uncharged conduct, including Cosby's own recollections in his deposition about giving women alcohol or quaaludes before sexual encounters. He was still saying anything that happened was consensual. Just as last May, Cosby was up for parole, but he was denied parole because he refused to participate in sex offender programs during 3 years now in state prison. He refused to go to those offender programs, refused to participate. So when you stand before the parole board, if you have not shown anything that shows that you're repentant, you're remorseful, you feel bad about it, you're trying to make yourself better, then they're probably going to say, no parole. Stamp it, and not this time. Cosby has stated repeatedly that he would resist those programs and refuse to acknowledge any wrongdoing, even if it means serving the full 10-year sentence. So this was the first year, and that being back in May, they was eligible for parole. Prosecutors insist that Cosby repeatedly used his fame and family man persona to manipulate young women, acting as a mentor before he would betray them. Cosby was everywhere on the ads, on every major brand. If you wanted somebody to bring credibility to your product, you wanted Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby and the Cosby Show were staple programs for everybody. I mean, the Cosby Show showed a dad that cared about people and kids and everything else. You had various brands coming forward, getting him to endorse them, Jell-O and so forth. But then when all this came out, obviously everybody started not walking away, running away, dropping him. At one time, he was estimated to be worth $400 million. Of course, that was all based upon his trademark of clean comedy, which he could do stand-up comedy and never once utter a word that others feel they have to. And, of course, then also talked in the black community about family values, and even they walked away from him because they felt their trust had been violated. Coming up in the next hour, Tucker Carlson. Is he wrong or right? Stand by.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.